And we're back here on the Metal Command Show. Time now is 10:52, and we are just heard some Bloodbound. Tabula Rasa, off the Tabula Rasa album. This is, of course, the off the new album, Tabula Rasa, but a song called Take One. Before that, Shatter Messiah, Never to Play a Servant. Then you heard some Heaven and Hell, Bible Black, off of the album The Devil You Know. And I got Bill Peters in the studio with me.
Hello, Tony.
All right. Awesome. And I'm going to play some Eternal Legacy coming up here. And we're going to be talking about the history of Auburn Records and the history of the music scene. It's really good to have you on the show, man.
Oh, thanks for inviting me. I'm looking forward to this interview, actually.
Yeah, that's pretty cool.
It's going to be a little different than some of the ones I've been doing.
Yeah, well, that's cool.
A little more extensive. Good to go a little deeper.
Hey, I mean, that's the whole purpose of it. But you do have a show coming up, the 12th, and, you know, and all that stuff, so... Got some new Eternal Legacy. Of course, we had them on the show a couple weeks ago. I think it was, no, it was last week? No, week before that.
Yeah, the CD release show was last Friday.
Yes, and how did that go? Good?
It went good. We had about 250 people come out.
Awesome.
That's very good for a holiday weekend.
Awesome, yeah. Definitely looking forward to actually getting into this album and listening to it. So I'm going to play a song off it, Abaddon, track number 4 off of this. And definitely check this album out. I mean, this is, God, I mean, I've only heard like 5 songs off of it, and I totally love the music, so I'm going to play this track for you now, and I'll see everybody next hour. We'll have that interview for you. And we're back here on the Metal Command Show, time 11:12, and just heard Eternal Legacy, Misery's End, off of the new album, Lifeless Alive, one of my favorite tracks off of this record. And we do have on the show someone that needs no introduction, but longtime founder of Auburn Records, and, of course, DJ at 88.7 WJCU, and got Bill Peters on with me, and... How's it going, man?
Hello, Tony. Back here home to WVWC, man. This is where it all started for me for radio.
Really?
Yeah, yeah. Oh, yeah. I started it with Bottom Wallace many years ago.
Awesome. So, you know, we're talking about Auburn Records and, you know, been around for the 25th anniversary. You have a show coming up and, you know, let's kind of talk about, you know, the show you got coming up here on the Beachland Ballroom.
Okay, well, yeah. The show is Saturday, December 12th, and it's my 25th anniversary concert. So, I decided to make it free. I have no idea why I decided this because of, you know, the expenses involved. But, you know, I really wanted to do it for the fans and tried to figure a way to make it happen. And, you know, the bands are all playing for free. They're donating their time. And we made it happen. So we got 11 bands playing here, Tony. I invited every band that I ever had worked with.
Mm-hmm.
To play this show, any bands that throughout the years, and I didn't realize the list was that long until I actually made it out to send out these invitations. I was like, oh my God, if everybody says yes, we're gonna have a 3-day festival here. Because there's a lot of bands over the years, and you just don't, you know, you don't think of it every day, you know.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
But you know, everybody I sent an invitation out to was, you know, reacted positive. They wanted to play, but some bands had other commitments going and, you know, travel distances and all that sort of thing. We just couldn't make it happen. So these are the bands that are able to play the show.
Now, did you think you'd make it 25 years?
I don't know, Tony, man. I don't know. You know, I'm still doing the radio show 27
yep.
years and
yep.
the label 25. I worked at Warner Brothers for over 25 years. You know, when you start out doing this stuff, you really don't think, you know, that far into the future. You're just going day to day trying to survive. And that kind of continued with me with the label.
Mm-hmm.
Cause it's always been a struggle to keep it going. And the struggle has been more on the financial end. I just pretty much have done this all on my own. I don't have any investors, finance these things on credit cards or whatever I can get, you know?
Mm-hmm.
So, no, I'm shocked it's 25. I can't even believe it's 25 years, to be honest with you. And I still do it. I still love doing it. And, you know, one of the things with my label, and Tony, you know this, being involved closely in the music business, you deal with a lot of shady characters in the music business.
Yes, you do.
And especially when you're on the end of label and band, you know, you got that wall between, and you got the label guys, then you got the band guys. And, you know, I've been working with the same people ever since when I started the label, the same bands, many of my same production crew, recording people. That's just unprecedented in this business, you know, and that just really is a true testament to the family atmosphere that we have at the label and the unique approach I do with the company.
Mm-hmm. Now, how did it all start? You know, you started it in 1984, and how did everything start with the label? You know, how did you get everything going? You know, what were some of the first bands you signed? And kind of go into how Auburn Records actually began.
Well, it actually started in 1982, you know, shortly after I started doing a radio show on WUJC at the time. And back then it was different with the Cleveland metal scene. You know, it was harder for bands to record albums back then. It was more expensive. You know, they didn't have the technology like you do today to record records inexpensive. I mean, when I went into the studios back then at Summa and Beechwood, great studios, it was like $85 an hour. Plus, you had to buy 2-inch tape, $150 a reel for 15 minutes.
Mm-hmm.
It was a great expense to put a record out. So many bands back then didn't have full-length albums out. And also back then in the early 80s, in fact, I had Snake Rock on my show tonight on my WJCU show,
mm-hmm.
and he was around back in the early 1980s. He was one of the few artists doing original music at the time. Most bands played majority covers. They would do 90% of their live sets were covers, and they would have one or two originals. That was the way the norm was. There was mm-hmm. very few all-original bands. So, you know, when I started doing the radio show, I started discovering, you know, cassette demos and reel-to-reel demos and 45s of these bands from Cleveland. You know, and they were very good, very good. But the band that really got me motivated to do the label was Breaker.
Mm-hmm.
And a story about how I got involved with Breaker was I went to a record store called Shattered Records.
I remember that.
You're familiar?
I used to get all sorts of cool vinyl imports from there.
Oh, yeah. I spent hundreds of dollars there every week.
Yeah.
With Frank Kanji, the yep. owner of that store, the guy we all know and love so much. Anyways, of course, Shattered had import records that you couldn't find anywhere else.
Mm-hmm.
And I was a huge fan of the new wave of British heavy metal movement. I collected all the singles and vinyl and everything. Well, I was in the store one day, and I ran into an old schoolmate. I grew up on the west side of Cleveland. In fact, my parents still live in the same house.
Mm-hmm.
Went to Schuller Junior High, John Marshall. And I ran into Jim Hamar. Now, I knew Jim from Schuller Junior High, and Jim was always a quiet kind of kid, kind of conservative, you know, never imagined him being into heavy metal music back when I was in school with him.
Mm-hmm.
Hadn't seen him for a long time. Ran into him at the record store. And it was nice to see him again. And he said, "Hey, Bill," I asked what he was doing. He said, "I'm in a band." And I said, "Oh, yeah." I said, he goes, "Yeah, it's a heavy metal band." I said, "Well, what do you do in the band?" And he said he was the singer. And I just couldn't believe it. I was like, Jim Hamar, this quiet, shy guy that I remember from junior high, you're the singer in a heavy metal band? I got to go see this. So the band was called Breaker, and they were playing a show at the Cleveland Connection, and actually Snake Rock was headlining, and Breaker was opening. And this was one of their first shows. They had only played a couple shows previous. So I went to the Cleveland Connection, which is on Berea Road in Cleveland, and I'll tell you, man, from the first notes of hearing Breaker, I think they opened up with From the Heart, a classic Breaker song. I could not believe how good this band was. I mean, I was totally in love with these guys from the first song right to the end. I mean, they were playing UFO-style Michael Schenker music, but it was all original. And I had never seen a Cleveland band live playing this kind of music, you know, all original heavy metal music that was so good. And that's what really kicked it into gear for me. It was like, wow, this band is great. And from that point on, I decided, you know, I'm going to try to put something together. And at the time, Mike Varney had U.S. metal compilations. Do you remember those at all, or is that before your time?
Not quite. I was pretty young back then, but I have heard of the compilations. So
okay, yeah, they were called U.S. Metal, and Mike Varney was from the West Coast, and he put together these compilations of unknown bands. Anyways, I came up with the idea, you know, well, this U.S. Metal series, how about Cleveland Metal? You know, we got these great bands here. I'll put all these demos together, all these recordings, and we'll put an album out called Cleveland Metal. so people can finally buy this music that nobody could buy before. They could only hear on the college radio stations, on reel-to-reel tapes or cassettes. So that's where the idea started for me to do the record label. And I did the first project with a friend of mine from high school, Tim Stewart. He was also a DJ on WCSB. And he was not a big metal fan, but he was interested in doing this project with me. So we did it together, and we selected the bands, and we put the record together. And it was released in 1983, and we used the label name Clubside Records, which was my street in North Olmsted where I lived at the time.
Mm-hmm.
I lived behind Great Northern Mall in a condominium, country club condominiums, and the street was called Clubside Drive. So I don't know, we couldn't think of a name, so I thought, oh, let's just name it Clubside Records. You know, that's the street I live on. Oh, okay, that's easy. You know, again, this is the first project we had done, so we didn't know what we were doing. This is all a learning experience. So that's where bands like Breaker and Black Death. Now, Black Death goes a little farther back for me, although I didn't know the band at the time. In the late 1970s, when I first discovered college radio, I started listening to WCSB 89.3 FM every Friday night. I was hooked. And as soon as I heard these great shows on WCSB, I would listen religiously every week. And there was a band that they would play on WCSB called Black Death, an all-black Cleveland metal band.
Mm-hmm.
I loved this band. I loved their songs. I would request them. I would wait to hear them every week. That was my first exposure to a Cleveland metal band, although I had never seen them live or never had talked to them then. So anyways, the Cleveland metal album featured bands like Shock Paris and Breaker and Black Death and some of the bands that went on to anchor my Auburn label.
Mm-hmm. So now let's kind of move on a little bit. You know, Shock Paris, and they had moved up pretty high level. I mean, they were on IRS records for a bit, and, you know, after Auburn and everything like that. And talk about how you discovered them.
Shock Paris was actually a band that Shock Paris had many firsts for me, and being in the right place at the right time, that's how I can describe Shock Paris.
Mm-hmm.
Because they were very fortunate. They got a lot of breaks early on. The way they got on the Cleveland metal album, we had another artist who wanted to have two tracks on the record. And at the time, we only had two tracks for Black Death.
Mm-hmm.
This artist not only wanted two tracks on the record, he wanted the first song on each side. So when this all was going down, I finally said, okay, no. Okay, we'll agree to two tracks, but we're not going to give you the first song on each side. That's just not going to happen. So this artist decided not to be on the record because we didn't want to give that. So we had two more tracks because we lost the two we were going to give him. So we decided to give Breaker a second song on the record because they were one of the bigger bands at the time, kind of breaking out of the scene, and Black Death. Those two bands had two tracks on our Cleveland metal album. Now we had one more spot left, and I asked the guys in Breaker, do you know any other bands? And they said, oh, these friends of ours practice down the street. It was above a doctor's office or a dentist office. I don't remember. It was like a medical building. So I went down to see them, and they only had three songs written. That was it. Run But Don't Hide, Burn It Down, and Go Down Fighting. I thought these three songs were amazing. And if you know the first Go for the Throat album I did, those are great songs on that mm-hmm. record. But they had a different singer in the band at the time. They didn't have Vic Hicks. So they played the only three songs they knew. They had never played out live. And we had a meeting. Tim and I were there, and we had a meeting with the band. Now, this medical building they practice, this doctor's office thing, it had different segregated rooms. So when we had the meeting, the band came in the room with us, but the singer waited in another room with the door shut. Okay, you know, I'm thinking, this is kind of strange. You know, why is the singer in this room and the rest of the band over here? And so they told us. The singer didn't know what we were talking about. Now, we were going to talk to them about being on our record. And the singer was not going to be in the band much longer, but he didn't know it at the time because they told me, well, look, we really want to be on your compilation record. We'll record with him, but we just wanted to tell you up front, we're going to ask him to leave the band right after we finish recording because we need a new singer. We need a new whole different direction. So they told me that up front. Now, little did I know at the time is that when the record came out and we took it to WMMS, who still played local music then, what song did they pick to play on the record? they pick Breaker and they pick Shock Paris. Shock Paris was the number one track they played. They started playing it in regular rotation, Go Down Fighting. It became a big hit on the record. Shock Paris's very first show at the Pop Shop with Vic Hicks was a headlining show. Now here's all the other bands, Breaker and Black Death, all working for years, struggling, opening, you know, building up a following. Shock Paris walks out here. They had three songs. They get on a record that we're doing at the last minute by a fluke. They get played on WMMS in heavy rotation. They come out as a headlining band.
Yeah.
So, you know, that's the way it goes, the breaks, and then they end up being the first band I get signed to a major label.
Awesome. Well, I think I saw a copy of Go For The Throat. Do you have that with you? Or
yeah, I
do. Some Shock Paris? Yeah, let's play something off that.
Of course, yeah.
You know, let's play something off that. Definitely. You know, I remember when you reissued this before, and I got it. This is definitely a great, great disc.
Yeah. I'm very proud of the first record. Mm-hmm. We recorded it at Summa Recording. I spent a lot of money on the recording. At the time, again, it was expensive to record records.
Yeah.
But Michael Klein from Breaker, a guitar player, he did the cover art, which is just a guillotine, a simple design. I really like the wood on the guillotine.
Yes,
man, he
definitely
put a lot of detail into that. But, you know, we didn't have digital technology, so he actually painted that. That's an actual painting he did.
Really?
Yeah, for the cover. So, yeah, I'm very happy with the way the first record turned out. So, Clubside Records in 1983, I'm trying to keep this historically correct here. After the Cleveland Metal album came out, it finished its run, and Tim really didn't have any desire to keep going with the heavy metal stuff and the label. So I wanted to keep doing it. So I left, you know, we split, you know, we didn't have like a partnership anymore. And I decided, you know, I'm just going to keep this going. So I wanted to come up with a new label name because we had used Clubside Records for our joint thing. And, well, it's hard to come up with a name. You're in a band, Tony. You know it's tough coming up with band names.
Yep,
it's hard coming up with label names as well. And I didn't want a label name that was like had the word metal in it, you know, like my show, Metal on Metal,
yeah,
or Metal Merchant Records or something like, you know, that. I just didn't want it to be metal. And a good friend of mine, Patty Van Dusen in Maple Heights, her street was Auburn Avenue. And I had used Clubside Records for the first label. And I don't know, it just hit me. You know, I was trying to think and I thought, Patty, you know, Auburn. And I thought, oh man, Auburn. Yeah, it's kind of got a cool sound to it. It's got the burn in there, you know, that's got the little metal edge to it, but it's not too metal sounding. You know, it doesn't have that certain cliche metal sound. So it just stuck. I just decided to call the label Auburn Records, and Shock Paris came out. Tim Stewart wanted to continue on and keep learning about this music business, so he managed Shock Paris.
Mm-hmm.
I put out the record, and he was the band's manager for a little bit there. So we still got to work together.
Awesome. So let's play a track off this. God, I haven't listened to this in a while. You know, I was digging out some of this stuff. You know, what track do you think we should play off this album?
Well, I'll tell you what. How about track 6, Caged Tiger?
Caged Tiger.
They're going to play this one live next week.
Awesome. Sounds good.
Yeah.
And we'll be back after this. And that was Caged Tiger off of Shock Paris' debut album, Go For The Throat. And
that song they're going to be doing, I will tell people that they are doing that song next week for all you diehard Shock Paris fans. That's kind of an obscure song. I mean, not super obscure, but that's one they don't always play live. And when I was announced Shock Paris was playing this show, I couldn't believe I got like about a dozen emails. I swear to God, Tony, people asking, hey, are they going to play Caged Tiger? I was like, where are all these people coming from? These Caged Tiger fans.
Well, if anybody has a question for Bill, you can email the show, officermetal@metalcommand.net. And that's all word. Officer Metal is all one word. So officermetal@metalcommand.net. If you have any questions you want to ask or anything you want to ask, now is the time to do it. You can send me some emails and, you know, then I will definitely ask those to Bill on the show. Now, you know, these guys ended up getting, you know, they ended up getting us, you know, had a couple albums after this. Maybe talk about that point.
Yeah, I mean, again, Tony, that we talked off the air. The history is so extensive. We could talk for 5 nights about, you know, the ins and outs of all this stuff. But I'll try to keep it just simple. I mean, And this is just a basic overview. Shock Paris got signed to a major label, and it was a joint label deal with IRS Records and Auburn Records. I don't think a lot of people actually knew that, but both of their albums were through a distribution deal with myself and MCA. But at the time, what happened was I worked at Warner Brothers, and one of our Elektra Records reps, Barry Lyons, he ended up going over to IRS, taking a job there, and he knew all about my heavy metal label. I worked at Warner Brothers and did my label on the side, and, you know, everybody was very supportive of that. In fact, Warner Brothers' very own pressing plant at the time actually did all my pressings. But Barry, when he went over to IRS Records, that label was only really known for The Police, right? R.E.M. I mean, Miles Copeland owned the label, but they were just indie rock. And he wanted to bring heavy metal to IRS Records, which was like, that was pretty radical back then. So he signed a band from Detroit called Seduce. And he told me, since he knew I had this label, you know, and he liked all the bands I had, he said, Bill, he goes, you can give me any band you want. He goes, anybody, just give me an album. He goes, and that'll be our first deal. He goes, I want to bring one of your bands over here. And at the time, at MasterDisc, I had Tony Dossi, very famous engineer, if you know anything about mastering. He was actually mastering my two albums. And the two albums he had at the time were Breakers Get Tough and Shock Paris is Steel and Starlight. And Breakers Get Tough was just, I mean, as it turned out to be, just underground classic, a masterpiece. Unfortunately, Breaker had asked Jim Hamar to leave the band. So we were finishing the record, and the band did not have a singer at the time. So I only had one choice I could give him to IRS Records. I told him, Shock Paris, send it over. And that's how they got to be the first major label band, because it probably would have been Breaker. Breaker had a bigger draw and had been more established at the time. So they probably would have been the first band to get the major deal if they had a singer.
Now, another band, I just had an email and something I was going to talk about. Now, let's talk about Destructor. And they are a band that's playing the show as well. And talk about how you found them and how they started out.
Okay, yeah, Destructor, I saw their very first show. I started with Destructor from the very beginning. And I think they had contacted me through the radio station. They listened to my show and, you know, said they wanted me to come out and see them. I remember the first demo they sent me. It was a cassette tape, and it had blood splatches all over it. Now, it looked like real blood. I don't know if it was real blood. Now, at the time Destructor came on the Cleveland metal scene, bands sounded more like Iron Maiden, Tony. I mean, they were more like technical, more precise sounding. And here was Destructor, and this is back in their early days. They were loud and noisy and rough sounding and, you know, a little maybe out of tune. You know, their songs didn't always end on time. I saw their very first show, and I just loved them. I mean, the connection that the Destructor had with the crowd, it was at the Pop Shop, was just amazing to me. I mean, it was just a bond, you know, and it looked like the crowd and the band were one. There was like no wall between the crowd watching a band on stage. It was just like one. There was a chemistry there. I saw it. And when I announced that I was going to work with this band, I'll tell you, other people and my bands on my label, they thought I was crazy. They're like, you're going to work with these guys? I mean, these guys can't play their instruments. You got to be kidding. These guys are too rough sounding, you know? But I saw something special in them. And as it turned out, you know, some 25 years later, you know, Destructor are still going strong. And we've had a long history together. I just knew from the very first show, there was something there. And I had no doubts in my mind I was going to work with Destructor. And I really have enjoyed my time with them. Yeah, they're going to play, in fact, the whole first album we recorded in 1985. We released Maximum Destruction at this show next week. They're going to play the whole album.
Now, have you thought about reissuing that album, you know, while we're on that topic?
Yes, it actually came out on Listenable Records in 1999, a French label. But it was not the original mix. It was a different mix of the record and different song order and different artwork. But next year, which is almost here, 2010, is the 25th anniversary of the album. So we're planning to release the original mix, which the fans have wanted, with the original artwork, and I have you know, bonus tracks that have never been heard.
Awesome. Sounds cool. Well, definitely looking forward to that as well. And, you know, I was looking up something, and, you know, I just acquired that Storm of Steel EP that you guys had, and they had a song, Storm of Steel, on a Heavy Artillery compilation. Maybe talk a little bit about that.
Yeah, Storm of Steel, well, that song came from the sessions we did at Beachwood Studios. I had signed a label deal with Island Records, which was going to be a three-year label deal. And it was for multiple albums by bands per year. So what happened with that was we started the recording at Beachwood Studios. And Destructor were the one of the bands, the first bands, along with Jag Panzer, who I was working with at the time as well, that were going to be on my Island Records Auburn deal. And in the middle of the recording, Dave Ionica was killed. Mm-hmm. And on January 1st, 1988, he was murdered. And... you know, we stopped the record, and all kinds of things happened after that with the label deal. But that song, Storm of Steel, is actually from those sessions. We went back in the studio after this incident happened, and we record. There's the Cleveland Metal album. And we went back and finished that song, and we did it and dedicated it to Dave.
Get John Basala with the save here.
Yeah, he's got the old Cleveland Metal album.
Well, we're gonna play something off of I'm gonna play that track, the original Storm of Steel, off that compilation.
Okay.
That is just a ripping song, dude. I mean, seriously. You know, when I first heard the original, I heard the regular version of this, and then I heard the original one, I was like, oh my god. I just cranked the stereo up in the car.
Now that song, that appeared on the Heavy Artillery compilation, 1990, and then we put a CD out called Storm of Steel in 2007. We did a limited run. It was for the Keep It True Festival in Germany. Mm-hmm. They actually dubbed the festival. They named it Storm of Steel. So
awesome! Yeah. It's cool. So I just got this Cleveland Metal compilation, thanks to John Basala bringing it up here, and
it's like looking back at a high school yearbook for me. You know, your old pictures on there.
You know, let's talk about Black Death on this thing, and, you know, I'm looking, you know, looking at this compilation, and kind of tell us a little bit about them, and you know, them recording this and you working with those guys.
Oh God, Black Death! I could write a book on lots of adventures with Black Death, but yeah, again, like I said earlier, Black Death was really the first Cleveland metal band I was exposed to on WCSB. I used to listen religiously to their metal shows to hear the Black Death songs, because WCSB would play the reel-to-reel tape, their demo, and I just really loved them a lot. So they were obviously the first choice for me to be on the Cleveland Metal album, them and Breaker. You know, I had seen Breaker live, but so those two bands were my early favorites. Working with them, I did an album with them. Did a lot of recording after the album with them. In fact, been working on a reissue for the album to come out as a double CD. And it's taken some time. You know, I've run into some delays and some unexpected sort of roadblocks, but that's not unusual for these projects. You know, I really want the Black Death to come out perfect, and I'm spending more time with it, tracking down the original master tapes of some of the recordings I did. I don't want to use second generation or third generation tapes, but I'm pretty much got it together, Tony. I know fans have been patiently waiting for years for this, but we're finally getting to that point where it's going to be coming out soon. So I'm ready to go with it. I can't wait to release it. It's going to be a double CD. It'll include everything I ever recorded with Black Death, all studio tracks, no live material. I do have a lot of live material, too.
Gotcha. Well, definitely want to play something off of this as well. Taken by Force off the Cleveland Metal compilation, the very first one you just talked about. And
yeah, you know, funny thing about this, I just thought of this too, and I haven't really mentioned this in an interview that I can think of lately.
Yeah.
But that song won a BBC award.
Really?
Yeah. Yeah, I actually have the vinyl transcription disc of what they played, but the BBC picked 10 unknown, undiscovered artists at the end of the year that were their favorites, and they played it on their syndicated BBC show, and Black Death, Taken by Force, was picked as one of the one of these artists. So I have the transcription disc at home from the BBC they had sent me with Black Death played on, you know, on
wow, that's
the
awesome.
BBC.
That so. That's something I never would have even thought of.
Yeah.
Well, we're definitely going to play. There's a play in this, playing some vinyl on the show, which is always fun. So check it out. We'll be back after this. And that is Black Death, Taken by Force, off of the Cleveland Metal compilation by what was Auburn Records, Clubside Records.
Right. Wow, that brought back some memories.
Now, you know, what's one thing that people probably don't know? I mean, are there any bands or anything that you've done with the label that really isn't well known? Well, tell us something that the average person would know, you know, that you've done or, you know, in the past.
Well, you know, I'm doing things all the time people don't know. That's a good question, actually. I think fans sometimes don't understand the behind the scenes, you know, what it takes to keep something like this going. Mm-hmm. You know, you think, oh, hey, just release this or do that. And I don't expect people to. And I really don't go public with all my behind the scenes, you know, issues to keep things going. So I've always got things going on, and I run the company a lot differently than most record labels, you may say. You know, I finance all my recordings. Bands don't pay for anything. And, you know, we run the label like a family. And that, you know, like I said, I've got the same artists I'm working with, Shock Paris, Destructor, Breaker, since when I started the label. It's a unique way of doing business, you know, but it's just the way I want to run things. I'm not money driven. I'm not in this for the money. You know, money really means nothing to me. I do it for the love of the music. And at one point, you know, in my younger years, I tried to make this a full-time occupation, but for a few years when I had some major label deals with MCA and Island Records. But for the most part, the majority of the years I've done the label, I've always had a full-time job and mm-hmm. have done this on the side.
Now, you know, you do have some newer bands, and, you know, probably a little bit before we go into the news, talk about, you got some newer bands on the label, and you've, you know, Licked the Blade and Eternal Legacy, and, you know, you signed a few other acts recently, and, you know, let's kind of talk about that.
Yeah, you know, one of the things I really missed with doing the label here in the 21st century was working with newer, younger bands. I mean, that's really what I enjoyed doing the most about Auburn Records. People always want me to reissue things, and I really don't want to be like Rhino Records. You know, Rhino Records is great at what they do, but I don't want to just be a reissue label and just, mm-hmm. you know, live in the past. I do, you know, I love all that stuff I used to work with, the releases that came out, the releases that never came out, and eventually I want to release all of them.
Mm-hmm.
But I also want to mix in new stuff because that's what I enjoy doing the most about the label.
Mm-hmm.
So I decided to, you know, find some newer bands and, you know, start working with them. And Lick the Blade and Eternal Legacy and Venom and James are three bands I'm really excited about.
Mm-hmm.
This new Eternal Legacy record, Lifeless Alive, I think came out just amazing. I mean, it's their second record. Great songs, just a marked improvement from the first record. And I feel good that I've been able to help the band. You know, I've been able to share my knowledge with them and help them get to the next level.
Mm-hmm.
And when I say to the next level, it doesn't always necessarily mean it's with me. I'm not here to hold anybody back. You know, I understand my limitations of what I can do, but I really enjoy working with the young bands. Mm-hmm. Lick the Blade, another one.
Yep.
Those guys had never even recorded in a studio when I took them in. And, you know, it was fun to educate them, you know,
yeah.
and show them how to do a record and put things together. You know, my Team Auburn people, whether they're in the studios or my production people, you know, we all work together and we all try to help, you know, especially with the younger bands.
Awesome. And, you know, when it comes to some of these younger bands, you know, are you still looking for bands? I mean, if there's a group out there, you know, say in the city or, you know, around here that's looking, you know, to go to that level, I mean, is there a way to contact you? Are you still looking for bands for the label? And
oh yeah, I'm always open. I mean, right now I have, you know, an overload of projects, but that mm-hmm. that changes, that comes and goes. But
mm-hmm.
no, I'm always looking, you know. And I only work with bands that I like personally. I'm mm-hmm. not, again, I don't do the label for money, so I'm not looking for the current trend, you know, like if you know, young thrash speed metal bands that play like, you know, that's 1980. Mm-hmm. That's the current rage. You know, I'm not going to go out just looking for those bands. I just look for what I like personally. I don't care if that kind of music is in or not. I feel confident enough if it's something I like, I think other people will like it too.
Mm-hmm. Awesome. So, you know, we ended up, I'm looking at this Maximum Destruction album. So again, they're playing this whole entire record.
Yeah. Yeah, hopefully they play it in the right order. We tried this in Germany. I a couple years ago, we did. We played a festival, the Bang Your Head Festival, big show, 20,000 people, mm-hmm. and we played the warm up show, which is in a club of about 1,000 people, sold out. Mm-hmm. So Destructor had two shows. So many of the fans that go to the warm up show are going to the big show too. So I said, "Well, let's do something different for the warm up show." So I came up with this great idea. I said, "Hey, how about we play the Maximum Destruction album in its entirety?" Well, the reason that didn't go over too well was because we had two different versions of Maximum Destruction, as I said earlier.
Yeah.
We had the vinyl version, the original version, with a different song order than the CD listenable records version.
Mm-hmm.
So when it came time to play the set, two of the guys in the band wrote the set list out from the vinyl version, and the other two wrote the set list out from the CD version. So when we got to about the third song, when it was different, two of the guys started playing one song, and the other two started playing the other song. So it ended up being, well, you know, oh, well, so much for my idea. Good thing the German beer held us over there, and the crowd didn't notice too much. But we were playing two different songs at the same time.
Well, that's awesome. Well, hey, we are going to go into the news here really quick. But, yeah, you know, it's pretty cool to hear some of this history and stuff. And, you know, we'll start off next hour something from the Maximum Destruction, the original version.
The original mix. That's the one the diehards love.
The original version off the vinyl. And, again, really interesting stuff. And I do have, you know, a few questions on here that we'll get to. And we'll be back after the news next hour. And we're back here. Time now, 12:12. We just heard Maximum Destruction off of Destructor's debut album, Maximum Destruction. And, you know, Bill, let's talk about the making of that album.
Well, that was recorded at Summa Recording Studio in Painesville, Ohio, with Paul Hammond.
Mm-hmm.
And I thought he did a great job with that record. Again, Destructor, as I said earlier, were very rough at the time, you know, didn't have much recording experience. And, you know, we worked really hard in the studio to get that record sounding as good as it turned out. I was really happy with the final production on that record.
Now, you know, we were talking earlier about, you know, you had some newer bands on the label and stuff like that. And, you know, we touched on Eternal Legacy. And, you know, talk about Lick the Blade, Venom, and James.
Okay.
Let's talk about those bands and how you found them and, you know, what they're doing right now.
Okay, well, Lick the Blade. Now, when I first heard the name Lick the Blade, I thought they were a glam band. You know, I thought, oh, God, this is one of those sleazy hair bands, you know, or something. But the bass player and Destructor, Jamie Walters, he went to see Lick the Blade, and he really liked him. And he told me, he goes, Bill, he goes, oh, man, he goes, I saw this band. He goes, they got your name written all over them. They sound like early Iron Maiden. And he said they were Lick the Blade. And I said, oh, I've seen that name before. I said, I didn't think they sounded like anything like that. So that's kind of how it all started. Right there was the initial contact, and then I went to see him, and, you know, the band, you know, is still in the developing stages, but I saw potential there, and they were very nice guys, just a great bunch of people to work with, and they had a willingness to learn, and that's where I really was drawn to. You know, it's like, you know, these guys, they want to listen, they want to improve, they want to get better. And we took him into the studio at Noise Floor Studio in Bedford, which mm-hmm. is run by Breaker drummer Mark Klein. And he took on the project, and I can't say enough about the job he did. He gave them, not only did he record their record, he mm-hmm. gave them an education in recording. He yeah. also educated them on how to do demos before you record and have parts worked out and song arrangements and all sorts of things. I'll tell you, the next record this band does is going to be so much easier for them
mm-hmm.
after the work Mark did with them. And just amazing. Really, he had the patience. I was there for most of the sessions with him. And it's something I really enjoy. I really enjoy working with younger bands and helping them get started. Venom and James, different story with them. Their sound is kind of like Caius meets Black Sabbath, which is a little different sounding thing for my label. I like that style of music myself. And this band, I think, is just, I mean, really, this band can go unlimited potential. Unlimited potential. If you ever seen Venom and James live, you know what I'm talking about.
I saw them live. Actually, you know, I remember we had a Lick the Blade CD release show, and I was really impressed. I walked in. About a song or two in their set. I really, really dug the music.
Now, their singer is in the Army, and he got called over to Afghanistan. He's going to be there as long as a year and a half. Mm-hmm. So when he comes home on leave, he can, you know, try to do some recording and play some shows. But it's going to put the band a little bit on hold. Mm-hmm. But I have a record ready that they recorded on their own. And the way I came about to work with these guys is that somebody in the local music industry got involved working with them and ended up not fulfilling the financial obligation.
Mm-hmm.
They had the record being mastered at a big studio with a pretty high expense, and the band was kind of stuck. And they approached me to try to help, and I did. I got them out of the mess they were in, and the record sounds fantastic. I can't wait to release it. So it's going to come out early next year, and I'm really got some high expectations for this band and this record.
Mm-hmm. Do have some of the emailers who love to harass me on the show.
Of course.
The first person asked, when you look for a new band, what is it that you look for? What are the things that you really look for? You know, I mean, obviously the music is there, but anything else? What intangibles do you look for?
You know, I kind of compare this to like a bowling league, okay? I used to be in a bowling league in my younger years. I bowled for many years at Fairview Lanes. And, you know, when you have a bowling team, you don't want to have just a bunch of 300 bowlers, but they're a bunch of jerks to hang out with.
Mm-hmm.
Because that makes it a miserable night out. So with the bands, you don't want to just have a great band, but they're all a bunch of jerks to work with, you know, because it's like, oh, that's not going to be very much fun.
Mm-hmm.
So not only do I look for the music, I also look for the personalities, you know, and the music is easy for me. I'm a heavy metal fanatic. So, you know, listening to bands and judging them on that sort of merits, I can do in my sleep.
Mm-hmm.
But what I really go beyond the music is I get to know the people individually, you know, in the band and you know, kind of find out what kind of people they are and where they're looking at taking the band.
Yeah.
So for me, it's two things. It's the music first. First and foremost, always the music. I got to like the music first. Second, I look into the makeup of the band, the personalities of the guys, you know, make sure they're not like all drug addicts, you know, or just difficult to work with, or they all have different visions of where the band's going, or it's just a money-driven thing.
Mm-hmm.
Now, I'm not interested in that, you
yeah.
know? I'm looking for guys that are willing to, hey, they're in this for the love of the music, they want to learn, they want to progress, and that's kind of what I look for.
Now, you know, talked about Lick the Blade, you know, they got an album out, Eternal Legacy's got an album coming out. Do you have anything else coming out, you know, for the upcoming year?
Oh, yeah, yeah. I got a lot of releases. Well, when the economy, I went, last year I went to Germany, a couple times. Actually, the first time I went in the summer and, I took Breaker and, they're very big in Germany. We played a big show there, Bang Your Head Festival with Judas Priest. And I took my wife for the very first time. I've been over to Germany like 12 times and I've never taken my wife because I can never afford it because I'm always end up, you know, advancing money and loaning the band's money.
Mm-hmm.
But the festival actually covered her expenses to bring her over. And I've been telling my German friends about my wife for years, but I think they were starting to doubt that she really existed. Oh, yeah, yeah, you got a wife, sure. So that was a very special trip for me because Breaker, man, I'll tell you, they delivered a great show at the Bang Your Head Festival.
Yeah.
One of my best performances ever. And then I got to take my wife, and she was more of a celebrity than I was. She was signing autographs from people. So that trip, and then the second trip, I went with Destructor, and it was just another fantastic trip. We played Wacken Open Air in front of 80,000 people.
Mm-hmm.
We did a two-week tour, which was the first time I had been over in Germany that long and actually played that many shows. And, you know, all my contacts for all the years, we got to easily get around Germany, and we had no problems with the tour. Mm-hmm. But when I came back to America in the fall, it was August, September, the economy really crashed here, especially in Ohio.
Mm-hmm.
And my distributors were all hurting. They weren't paying on time because they couldn't, sell music.
Mm-hmm.
So I learned from my past. I made many mistakes in the past. When it comes to distribution, you get burned. And I always get burned once, but then you learn. And I decided, you know what? I'm just going to shut down releases, ride out the economy until things turn around, because I can't afford to take a loss.
Yeah.
I don't have a stockpile of money and can put out 10 releases and wait a year to get paid.
Mm-hmm.
All I do, everything I make from Auburn, I recycle into more projects. I don't take any money out. It just is a big circle. It just goes back into more. So I decided to stop releasing records.
Yeah.
And I went into the studio and recorded a whole bunch of albums behind the scenes. So while the economy was bad, I was doing behind the scenes work, preparing more records. So now I've got a backlog of albums to put out.
Yeah.
I've got Venom and James ready to go. I've got a Hate record ready. I've got Chemikill. I've got Wretch.
Mm-hmm.
I'm about to start a new Destructor record. I've got the Black Death reissue. I've got some Shock Paris things I'm starting to work on again.
Yeah.
So I've got a full schedule for 2010. The economy turned around in Europe, which sells the most of my music in Germany. So I felt okay, I could start releasing some records again. So I put out Lick the Blade, I put out Eternal Legacy. I've got some more stuff coming. Hopefully the economy turns around here in this country. It's still struggling here, especially in Ohio.
Yeah.
So to answer your question, I've got a lot of stuff coming out. I really
awesome.
Do. I'm prepared, man. I got some great music. It's just now I got to find a way to get it all out.
Sounds great. Well, we're going to play something we just talked about Lick the Blade. We're going to play Thanatos, first track off the record, one of my favorite songs off this album, Graveyard of Empires, which is out now worldwide.
We released it in July in Europe. I took the band to Germany, and then we released it in October here in the States.
Awesome. And that is Thanatos by Lick the Blade, basically the first track off of this album. And got some good look at some compilations you got going on here. Tell us about the show coming up again on December 12th. You got a shirt you were talking about earlier.
Yeah, at my 20th anniversary show at the Odeon, which I did with the Brave Words and Bloody Knuckles six-pack weekend festival, I kind of tied it into that. We made a CD that Tony has in his hand right now, a little 20th anniversary sampler. And this year I decided to do something different. I've got a nice 25th anniversary t-shirt. It's going to be limited. I took some of these over to Germany and pretty much sold everything I took over.
Mm-hmm.
But going to have those available at the show next week. So if you want to pick it up, it looks great. It's like a 14-color t-shirt. It's like totally ridiculous, the cost on the shirt, I'll never recoup the money on the shirt. But I said, for my 25th anniversary, I got to do like just one nice shirt, for my entire career. We got to do one good one. So so we actually did. It looks great. Mark Klein did the design on it from Breaker. And, it looks really good. It's got the heavy artillery tank on the back and it's got all the band logos and the German flag, the American flag. It's pretty cool. But the show is Saturday, December 12th at the Beachland Ballroom. And I'm pretty much fronting all the production costs. It's free.
Mm-hmm.
If you're underage, there's no extra charge. I'm taking that cost out, too. The Beachland's been great to work with on this show.
Great, great sound.
Yeah, actually, the sound man there, I should mention him, actually. I'm glad you mentioned that. Mike Miller. One of the best sound guys here in Cleveland, sound engineers.
Yeah.
Does a great job. And, the sound is always good at the Beachland.
And a lot of people don't realize, but from the band perspective and playing, I think I've played two shows. Their last Archetype show I played there, the monitor mix and on the stage was unbelievable.
Yeah. And oftentimes, Mike does not have a monitor engineer. He's doing everything himself, which, makes it even more great than what he's doing.
But
no, he's a great sound guy to work with. I love working with the Beachland. They're not a heavy metal venue by any means. They don't want to do heavy metal all the time, but they love doing my shows because they're always well organized and promoted. And with any Auburn show, I always run the shows on time. I try to make sure that the sound is good and everything is perfect for the fans, and I care. I set the show up like I'm a fan, like, hey, if I'm walking in here, how would I want to see this show? So I've had actually people come to me and say, hey, when I see your little Auburn logo on a show, I know it's going to be a great night. It's going to be on time. It's going to be a professional thing. And that makes me feel good because my crew is fantastic. My Team Auburn crew that helps me with the production. And you know, we take pride in that. We take pride in running our shows on time,
mm-hmm.
like the European festivals that run to the minute.
Yep. Now, I had a couple questions here that I haven't gotten to yet. I cannot find Sonic Bullet by Destructor.
Sonic Bullet right now is out of print, sold out.
Yeah.
Another item that, you know, hopefully will be reissued.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, right now it is an out-of-print item.
And any of the reissues that you plan on doing, do you ever plan on putting anything out on vinyl?
Actually, I've had some offers, and I'm looking closely at a German company right now
mm-hmm.
to do some vinyl. I am not going to get into the vinyl business again myself personally.
Yeah.
Only because I love vinyl. I mean, if anyone knows me personally, you know I have a huge collection of vinyl.
Mm-hmm.
I've saved everything I've ever bought since I was a kid. And I have to rent a separate storage unit to store everything because I just don't have the room in my house.
Mm-hmm.
But unfortunately, with my limited financial resources, I don't have enough money to do vinyl and do CDs and keep releases going. So I would rather like license that out to somebody that I feel confident in that's going to do a good job.
Mm-hmm.
And I've been very particular about that because if you know the vinyl business today, there are some companies that don't do quality work. They put just kind of throw things out and they don't do nice jackets. They don't do the, you know, quality vinyl. I want if I'm going to do vinyl, I want it to be good for the fans. I know it's not a cheap item to buy these days.
Mm-hmm.
I want it to be quality. So if I'm going to tie in with somebody, I got to make sure it's good. It's good stuff. And I think I maybe have found a company, and maybe in 2010 I'm going to start doing some vinyl. But
mm-hmm.
Unfortunately, the offers that I've had come to me have not been up to my standards.
Now, one of the questions, you know, something I've really been, you know, wanted to ask as well, you know, obviously you're a metal fan like we all are, and you know, for your label and stuff, you know, the 90s was a very dark time for this type of music. And, you know, how did you get through that?
Well, I went on hiatus for a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
And the reasons were many. But, you know, I kind of went full circle with the label. I started small,
mm-hmm.
just doing it on my own. And then I got into the late 80s where I got the major label deals. I got the Island Records label deal. I got MCA. I got Roadrunner.
Mm-hmm.
I got SPV I had to deal with. I'll tell you what, you know, when you get involved with those kind of big companies and you get people coming in telling you, you should be doing this, you should be doing that, you know, and people that don't like this kind of music, you know.
Mm-hmm.
So I made a stand. I made a decision. And I always stood up for the bands. You know, I looked after their best interests. And those best interests weren't always in the major label's view as being the right way to go.
Mm-hmm.
They're looking at it as a money thing.
Yeah.
I'm looking at it as, hey, my job here is to represent these musicians. I'm almost a musician myself.
Yeah.
And by making those hard decisions and taking a stand and walking away from deals and fighting for my bands with every step of the way with these companies, I took myself out of the financial equation.
Mm-hmm.
So when it came to the 90s, it was some dark times because I didn't have the money. I didn't have the major label backing anymore. So
yeah.
I was back to doing it myself. And as you know, heavy metal took a nosedive in that era with the grunge that came out and all that sort of stuff. So, in the 90s, I kind of just regrouped, you know. I kind of, you know, built up my reservoir of finances again
mm-hmm.
and went back to work full time. And I had a family, you know, my son and daughter were born during that time. So I spent time with them. And then in the late 90s, came back.
Yep. Awesome. So. Now, you know, for you today, compared to, say, when the label started out, you know, what are some of the biggest differences in producing or making an album with a band now as compared to 20, 25 years ago?
Oh, it's so much easier now. So much easier. Everything. You know, the internet's changed everything.
Mm-hmm.
You know, even just communicating. I mean, I used to handwrite letters to people and wait 3 months to get a response from Germany. So now it's so instant. And the same with recording. Like I told you, when we started,
mm-hmm.
you know, I was going into good studios, Summa, great studio, Beechwood, great studio, very expensive. You know, the budgets I was spending for these records, today you would never spend that kind of money on a recording.
Mm-hmm.
But that's the only way you could do it.
Yeah.
So now you can have home studios. You got Pro Tools, you know, Nuendo, whatever. You got all these different programs. And you can record a record very reasonably. The one thing that I don't like about today, though, is that people aren't spending money for music. I mean,
yeah.
There's a perception that music is free. And I don't like that. Whether you're getting your music digitally or still physically, you should be paying for it. You mm-hmm. really should. Yeah. And I understand why people got that attitude. It's the major labels, their own fault. They ignored the internet. They ignored downloading. They ignored everything for years and kept doing business the same way and charging people too much money for music. So when people could get music for free, they thought, hey, we're sticking it to the major labels, you know, screw those guys. We're going to steal their music. But they're really hurting small guys, too. They're hurting bands like Destructor and Breaker mm-hmm. and Bill Peters and guys that are trying to keep this going. If we don't have any kind of income coming in, we can't make records.
Yeah.
You know, we can't record. We can't do anything.
Mm-hmm.
So I always buy music. I mean, I have access to get free music as much as anybody.
Yeah.
But I still go to Ultrasound Music. I still go to Record Den. I still go to The Exchange. I buy so much music. You wouldn't believe how much I spend each month on music.
Yeah.
I still want to support bands.
Mm-hmm.
I really do.
I'm the same way.
And, you know, I understand, you know, with the internet, you know, hey, somebody sends you some free music to listen to. You know, and if they do, I listen to it. If I like it, I don't put the CDR in my collection. I go buy the album.
Yeah.
If I don't like it, I throw it out.
And do you think a lot of, you know, speaking of the internet, do you think that's really helped out, especially places like MySpace and, you know, stuff where you can really get your stuff out there and help promote? I mean, has that really helped out?
Oh, of course. Of course. I mean, but you still, even with all access to that, you still need people like Tony Webster down here every week.
Yeah.
Because you are channeling all this new music and putting a show together for people, like a recap.
Yeah.
Not many people have time to sit on the internet all night and listen to everything new that's coming out.
Yeah. Yeah.
So if people trust you and they like your show, they like the music you play,
mm-hmm.
they can tune in each week and you're going to give them the highlights of the new releases.
Yep, yep.
And that's why radio still has a purpose, like our kind of radio, college mm-hmm. radio.
Yeah.
Even though anybody can listen to everything online.
Yeah.
You could never do that back in the 80s.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the only place you could hear some of this new music would be our shows.
Yeah.
But now, yeah, you just go on your computer, you can listen to everything. But who's got time to do that?
Yep, yep, yep.
So, yeah, it has helped. And also with bands, you know, they can put up MySpace sites and websites quickly and get their information out and put their music up. So, yeah, you can hear music that you could never hear before from obscure bands.
Now, speaking of that, as a music fan, any releases for this year that really appealed to you?
As a fan?
As a fan,
yeah. Oh, okay. Well, a loaded question. I buy so much music. I mean, I couldn't even begin to know where to start. I mean, I like this band called Metal Force.
Yeah.
They used to be called Majesty. They're the German Manowar.
Yep.
I've been kind of hooked on that record. I like the new Slayer record.
Yeah, I like that too.
At first, I wasn't crazy about it, but mm-hmm. it's really warming up to me.
Yeah.
I don't know, man. I wouldn't even know what to tell you as far as like what new I like. There's so much stuff I buy. It's just ridiculous.
Well, we're going to play a track by Breaker and Still Life. And this is from the Heavy Artillery album or compilation. At least it says on the compilation you have.
Mm-hmm.
And we're going to play this track for you. I'll be right back after this. And we're back around the Metal Command Show. Time now 12:43. Coming close to wrapping up the show. I have Bill Peters of Auburn Records, of course.
I love that Breaker song. That's one of my favorite Auburn songs right there.
Great production, too.
You know, my wife texted me. She heard me talking about her earlier. She wanted me to make sure to mention that she intro'd the band at that festival. And Tony, I told her like 5 minutes before we went on stage because they had the full filming with the boom camera in front and everything. And I knew she'd be nervous. So I told her 5 minutes before the band went on, I said, hey, by the way, you're going to intro them and they're filming you for a DVD.
Mm-hmm.
So she was freaking out, you know, but she went out and did a great job.
You know, speaking of those festivals, for those people that have never been to those, what kind of atmosphere is that compared to, say, over here?
Oh, it's so different. Seriously, if you're listening to this show, you got to make the pilgrimage to Germany once in your life.
Yeah.
It's just a whole different experience in here. It's, mm-hmm. I mean, if you go to, like, Ozfest, you know, it's more of a party, a social sort of thing. Over there, the people are there for the bands and the music. And it's just a different I can't even explain it to you. You got to go to it. I mean, if the show starts at 9 a.m., my German friends are lined up at 9 a.m. They watch every band all the way till 2 in the morning. And then if the show starts the next day at 9 a.m., they're there at 9 a.m. again, and they watch all the bands. I mean, it's just they're there for the music. And there's a mixture of music. You'll have thrash bands, you know, you'll have death metal bands, and then you'll have a band like Rose Tattoo play right in the middle. And everybody gets along. Nobody's booing them or flipping them off or walking away. The guy that was getting into Sodom and Destruction, he's right up front getting into Rose Tattoo. So it's just a whole different culture, just a whole different culture.
Now, one of the things that really surprised me when you were on a show, I believe it was with Eternal Legacy or somebody, you worked with Jag Panzer. And I never knew. That was something I never knew.
Yeah, that actually hasn't been written about too much. Jag Panzer were always one of my favorite bands. Ample Destruction has got to be one of my top 10 albums of all time. So it was an honor for me to work with the band. I actually was working with both bands because Tyrant at the time, the original Jag Panzer singer, had left to form his own band called Titan Force. And Jag Panzer were continuing along with a different singer. And this is when they recorded the album Chain of Command. They were actually part of my Auburn Island deal. And I worked with them for about a year and a half. Actually was flying back and forth to Colorado Springs to oversee that album. I saw the band play live in Denver. They opened up for Halloween. A band you know, Tony.
Yes, have some history there.
So, yeah, the album ended up not coming out because the Island Auburn deal, you know, after Dave Ianica was killed and murdered, the whole deal slowly kind of unraveled for me. And there was a lot of issues I have no time to get into here. But it was another one of those deals where it was a lot of money for me personally in that deal for the label. I actually had hired somebody from Texas who worked with Z-Rock, Shelley Steele, and moved her up here. We actually had an office. But it came time I took a stand, you know, and when the label came pushing and, you know, I felt not treating the bands right, that's when I took up a stand and I got out of the deal.
Now, you know, they recorded the album Chain of Command. So it was reissued through, what, Century Media, I believe?
Yeah, I think in 2004 they finally released it. And I'm glad it finally came out. I really am, because I thought it was a really good record.
Yeah.
Of course, Jag Panzer with the Tyrant is, that's the real Jag Panzer.
Yeah.
But I thought, for having a different singer, I really like that record. I think it's a good record. The guys are great to work with. In fact, Tony, the first band I asked to play my 25th anniversary show was Jag Panzer. I was going to try to fly them in here and have them headline the show. But unfortunately, they had some recording time booked in December, and the dates didn't coordinate.
Yeah. That would have been great. I mean, we have the show that's December 12th. What time does it start? 4:30, you said?
It starts at 4.
It starts at 4.
And
okay.
It goes all the way till 2, so it's going to be 10 hours of metal.
Wow, that's going to be crazy.
So, you know, my German friends, if this show were in Germany, they'd be there at 3 o'clock waiting in line, and they'd stay till the very end.
Now,
so,
you do have a German friend over here.
I do have a German friend, Iron Ingo, from metalrules.de.
Yeah.
He's a writer, and he's also a gardener. He owns his own gardening business.
Really?
Yeah. And very successful business, actually. And he's a heavy metal gardener. he's here. He's already here in Cleveland.
Yeah. Is he listening, do you think?
He may be. He's staying right now with Dave Overkill from Destructor out in Wycliffe. And, he's excited. He's going to be here 17 days in Cleveland. He's going to MC the show. He's going to review it. We have a lunch for him tomorrow. Taking him out to a German restaurant. Probably the last place he wants to go, but it's kind of a tradition for me to take my German friends to this German restaurant.
He's taking the rallies.
I think he went to Taco Bell, actually.
I don't think they have Taco Bells over there.
You know, he told me today there are some in some places, but in all my trips, I've never seen a Taco Bell. I've never seen a Wendy's.
Yeah.
I don't think I've ever seen an Arby's. Burger King and McDonald's
seen a Pizza Hut in Hamburg.
Oh, you have?
A few times, yeah.
Okay. Now, KFC I've seen.
They actually delivered, I saw them delivering pizzas in those smart cars over there.
Oh, yeah.
The last time I was over there, it was pretty funny. Those little tiny little smart cars, they had a little pizza thing on the back, running them over to the hotel and all the other stuff.
Well, you know, I'm kind of a fast food junkie, so, you know, in McDonald's in Germany, you can get McBeer with your meal.
Yes, you can.
But that's that's kind of surreal when you first go over. Every band I take over, the first thing, you know, we go into the McDonald's and they all want to take a picture of the menu with the beer up there.
You know, another band I wanted to talk about and probably going to end the show with this is Purgatory.
Ah, Purgatory, one of my personal favorites.
And let's talk about them. You know, let's talk about that album, Tied to the Tracks, and, you know, let's talk about that band.
Okay, well, Purgatory, Jeff Hatrix from Purgatory is the singer in Mushroomhead. Mm-hmm. And they wanted to play this show, but Mushroomhead's on tour and won't be here, unfortunately. But, yeah, Tied to the Tracks came out in 1986. And, you know, we actually had recorded, or actually, you know, we hadn't started. We did a demos for the second album. It was going to be called Dark Alley Surgery. And the band changed their lineup. They replaced their guitar player with two different guitar players and kind of went into a heavier sort of sound. But I wish that album would have been recorded because, boy, there's some great tracks on that.
Mm-hmm.
Another record on the list of things I want to reissue. And when I reissue the records, I just don't just throw these out. I always try to get all the band members' involvement, you know, and that's important to me. And with that record, I want Jeff Hatrix to be involved. He wants to help write the liner notes and all the reissues I've done. I always have the band members contribute, and I want them to be part of it. I want them to enjoy the reissue as much as I do. So that one, unfortunately, just been so busy with Mushroomhead that we haven't been able to sit down and work on it. Now, I did talk to Jeff actually last week, and he found some video footage of the Dark Alley Surgery tracks that was filmed. I didn't even know this existed. That is very good quality. So we're talking about putting out Tied to the Tracks with a bonus DVD now, and he says maybe we can do this next year.
No, that sounds awesome.
Yeah.
You got a lot in store coming up next year.
Well, I got a lot on the list, and unfortunately, you know, things don't always come out on time or whatever, but, you know, I run into a lot of roadblocks and obstacles I don't really talk about publicly because, you know, I just do it. I just go around them, work around it, and do my thing, and then try to put out stuff as I can. That's all you can do.
Over the course of your career with this label, what is the thing you're most proud of? The one thing?
The one thing? Let's see. You know, the quality has always been important to me.
Mm-hmm.
So since I'm a fan too, I've always tried to put out the best quality I could with the limited budgets. If people knew the budgets I have to work with, you'd be shocked. Yeah. But I take great pride in that. I really do. And when fans come up to me and tell me, "Oh man, that is just great. You know, I love that record." It just makes me feel so good.
Mm-hmm.
So the quality of the label is very important to me. Again, it's not a money driven thing with me. The quality is, I could tell you stories about booklets I have redone, thrown out because of mistakes or colors weren't right.
Mm-hmm.
I'll tell you a story about Lick the Blade.
Mm-hmm.
In fact, that album came out, and a drummer had just gotten married. Well, inadvertently, I did not know his fiance at the time, but the band left her out of the credits. And when she saw the first pressing, the first run of the booklets, you know, she was kind of bummed out about it.
Yeah.
And they were just getting married. So, you know what I did? I did something crazy. You never should do this, but it doesn't make any business sense. But for their wedding gift, I reran the books and I put her name in it. And I actually added a photo she had taken of her husband, the drummer, into the book. And so she got a photo credit and a special thanks credit. And I didn't even tell the band I was doing this. And I just did it. I opened up all the shrink wrap CDs I had. I replaced the old booklet with the new booklet, threw out the old ones, re-shrunk wrap them, and now sold them, and I presented it to her. I said, "Here, this is my wedding gift to you guys." And they were just so touched by it, you know, and even the pressing plant was telling, "Oh my God," you know, my rep at the pressing plant, she was like so emotional about it. "I can't believe you're doing that for him. Oh, that's so nice. That means so much to her," you know. But Tony, that's the way I run the label, more from the heart.
Mm-hmm.
And I knew that kind of meant a lot to her. She'd worked with the band for years, you know, with supporting her now husband, and, you know, not to have your name in the credits of the first album.
Yeah.
Hey, it was an oversight, you know.
Mm-hmm.
So we corrected it.
Well, hey, I'll tell you what, man. Ending the show, it was a lot of fun, very interesting. This is something I've really wanted to do for quite a long time, and, you know, it was great to have you on. It really was. I mean, this is something that, you know, this is an interview I'll be able to look at, one of the best interviews I've ever done.
Oh, thank you.
And, you know, just to get the perspective on things and what the scene was like, and, you know, just the label and everything. And I'll tell you what, I'm looking forward to what you got going on. this coming year, and you know, anything you'd like to say to end off the show?
No, you know, I just try to stay positive the best I can, Tony. You know, the economy's rough out there. It's a negative world. I'll tell you, there's many times I get depressed. I feel like just quitting everything. You know, my wife can tell you. She's the only one that knows the real frustrations I have. But, you know, I just try to keep going and stay positive the best I can. And I'm just going to keep doing this until I can't do it anymore. That's all I could say.
While we're ending off the show, Tied to the Tracks by Purgatory.
Uh-oh. That's a real train we recorded, by the way. We almost got hit. We actually mic'd the tracks. I'm serious.
I will have this on the website, of course. You can download it next week. And if you happen to miss any part of the interview, or you missed most of the interview, or if you missed all of it, if you know someone that missed it. So definitely looking, definitely really happy to have you on, and definitely looking forward to what's coming up next year. And, you know,
okay,
we'll see you then, man.
Yeah, try to come out.
I am going to come out. So I'm definitely coming out to that show. I want the shirt. I want to buy the shirt.
Okay. Well, yeah, there's not many of them, so get there early.
I'll definitely be there. All right, man. Well, hey, you take care.
Okay, thanks.